So basically, last class we started talking about the question of how would we analyze a strategy, okay, develop and analyze a strategy for betting on, you know, for investing in the financial markets or solving some financial problem. We would like to come up with a way of proving that our strategy has some interesting property. That's really sort of the interesting question that we looked at before. And basically, we looked at the problem last time of, you know, if you had a security that you knew roughly where, you know, the upper and lower bounds where it could move, okay, what would be your, and you wanted to, in the case of the one-way trading model, you want to liquidate your position in the asset. You have a lot of the asset now. You want to end up with none of the assets after time period end. The one-way trading problem was how do you liquidate it to get it, you know, get the best possible price that you can, okay, or the most money that you can while you liquidate it, okay? And in order to make the problems rigorous and things we proved about, we talked about the competitive model for online algorithms. Namely, that we are going to be dealing with an adversary who is going to try to make us lose as much money as possible. And we want to try to develop a strategy that will protect us against the adversary, okay, as much as possible, okay? Any questions about that? So that they want to invest in such a way that no matter what the adversary does, okay, no matter what the markets do, okay, so long as they have the property that they're within, let's say, our specified conditions, in the case the price never went below this or above that, we want to try to assess how we're doing compared to the worst possible outcome for our strategy. Where namely what we're comparing was, the analyzing was our competitive ratio. Namely, what would be the optimum if we knew the future over what we actually get, okay, our strategy actually gives us on that same input. And the competitive ratio is the worst possible result of if we knew the future versus we didn't know the future, okay? And a strategy is good if this ratio is fairly low, okay? A strategy is not as good if this ratio is high, okay? And what we showed last time was this, what I think is kind of a surprising result, that in fact, with very little assumptions about what the prices can do, you can still prove, you know, reasonably strong results that you can do somewhat well relative to what would happen if you knew the future. That was sort of what the point was last time. Does everybody agree? And we had talked about two different classes of strategy of problems. One was one-way trading, where you're allowed, the price is varying over time, and you want to liquidate your position. So you start with a lot, you're going to end up with nothing, but you're allowed to sell at multiple intervals, okay? The other one was what we'd call price searching, which is you're only allowed to sell once. You're selling an oil painting, and there's an oil painting market here, okay? And, you know, the interest in Rembrandt is fluctuating as a function of time. You want to know when can you sell, when should you sell to maximize your return, okay? Any questions? We looked at two strategies for those problems. Okay? And I'd like to continue in the same vein of problems where we're using competitive algorithms. Okay? Trying to come up with strategies that were would give us some kind of good competitive performance. Okay? Oh my God, the thing's clear now. Something we may have gotten a new projector. Okay? Any questions? Okay? So, what were the two strategies we looked at last time, actually? There were two strategies involved. One was just a sort of review so we can better assess it. One was the case where suppose we wanted to sell the house, that we'd only sell once. We set a fixed price, and we said we would sell it whenever we could get at least that fixed price. Otherwise, we would sell it at the very end. And we proved that if we picked the right fixed price, we could optimize our competitive ratio. That was one result from last time. The other idea was, if we wanted to move our stuff, you know, we were allowed to sell it multiple times, okay? Or if we wanted to have a randomized strategy, we're allowed to have a randomized strategy, we had the strategy of selling at lots of different price levels, okay, and picking one of them at random and proving that that gave us a better ratio in an expected sense. Okay, that all bring back some memories. Okay, but if even if we wanted to, let's say, sell multiple times, we could put one end of our stash on each one of these thresholds, and then we would achieve the expected result. Okay, any questions? So those were two classes of strategies where we had some results. Yeah.
A fixed set of entries at each level. What if the one particular level is built more than the others?
Well, if we were using the randomizer, we put one quarter of our assets here at each one of these levels. I mean, one tenth of our assets at each one of the levels. If the initial price was here, okay, what we would do is instantly find sellers at all these prices. Okay? Now, in practice, if we were going to be doing that, then probably what we should have done is, in fact, sold all of them at the, raise our initial price to the market price. Okay? And that would be the right thing to do. Okay? It's not going to change our theoretical bound at all in the worst case. Because it might very well be that in the worst case, the time might have been here and then change. Okay? Any questions? I don't even think that answers the question. Any questions? Okay, so let's look at another type of strategy, perhaps, to move money out here. And so we're looking at the one-way trading model where we want to liquidate our position. What happens if we know that we can get a competitive ratio of C? Okay, in the best, meaning that we know that there exists an algorithm that will always do no worse than C times what it would do if it knew the future. Okay? Can we figure out that algorithm just by knowing that bound? Okay? Suppose I tell you that there existed such a bound. Could you find an algorithm that would sell and realize that bound, knowing that it was possible? And I'm going to explain this class of algorithms that are kind of interesting called threat-based algorithms, okay, or strategies. Suppose we have the following situation. Suppose we know that there is a worst-case competitive ratio of C could be achieved. Okay? Suppose that the current price is fairly high. Okay? If I don't sell now, if I don't sell my asset now, the adversary can immediately lower the price and make me look bad. Everybody agree with that? Because if the price was momentarily high, and then I didn't transfer and immediately dropped down, that I argue means that if the ratio of this to this, if this is sort of M, and this is, let's say, greater than CM, C times M. If I didn't buy here, I claim I could not have achieved the competitive ratio of C. Does everybody agree with that? Okay. Suppose, let's say, I'm trying to find a strategy that will guarantee me always getting a competitive ratio of C or better. Okay? Suppose I know that there is such a C, that there is a strategy for some C. Okay? I overhear some mathematician tell me, you know, there's a strategy for that achieves a bound of C for one-way trading. Okay? And now I am hired to do one-way trading. They say, well, Skeen and do it. Okay? Let's see if we can figure out the strategy based on knowing the bound. Okay? And I want to argue that we can sort of figure out such a strategy. Why is that? Because suppose, let's say, the price was greater than or equal to, the initial price was greater than or equal to C times M. Okay? M was the lower bound here. Right? If I don't sell here, okay, something here, okay, I am going to be in trouble. Does everybody agree with that? So, if the price, initial price is greater than CM, and I'm allowed to sell multiple times, I had better sell something, or else the gods can make me suffer. Right? Does everybody agree with that? Now, on the other hand, should I sell everything? Here is the upper bound M that I want to go through. Okay? Can I necessarily sell everything now? Should I sell everything now? And the answer is, not necessarily. Because it may be if I sell everything, the adversary will immediately jack the price up to the maximum. And if it does that, if there is more than a factor of C between here and here, I have made the look bad, correct? Does everybody agree with that? So what I claim should be obvious is, if I am trying to achieve a ratio of C, I know I can do it, okay? That there is a strategy that does it. Then I know that at the very beginning here, okay, if the price is too high, okay, it's higher than C, okay, I better sell something. But I also know I better not sell everything, unless I am within a factor of C of the top. Does everybody agree with that? So what I want to claim is that there is a threat-based strategy which we can use. What is the threat? The threat is, you know, the adversary, there is now a current price. And I'm threatened if I either don't do something, if I don't do something here, I can be made to lose, right? I know that there is a way for me to win. If there is a way for me to win, then there is a certain amount of money that I should use to buy it now. Okay? To make me buy at this price. Well, I want to eventually unload everything, okay? But I don't know what the future is. I know that I can get, by having been told in my ear, I can get a ratio of size of C, okay? Yeah. But I would only achieve that if the world came to an end immediately, which there's no guarantee of. Okay, if there is, I probably don't really care about selling it, okay? Or, if this value is within C of the maximum bound I can get, right? If I'm within C of the maximum bound I can get, I might as well sell it all now. If I'm within C of the lower bound, I had better sell something. I better sell something or else I'm in trouble. What I claim is that there is an amount to sell, okay? An amount I can sell to ensure that if there was a way of getting a competitive C ratio, okay, I can sell just enough now that in response to future price changes, okay, I will never get hurt. Okay, I will still be able to get a factor C total sale. Okay, C times up, okay, no matter what happens in the future. Okay, yeah.
What if I don't choose? I mean, I choose not to sell anything at the start itself, and say the price actually went down. What if the price went up later?
Well, okay. It has to do with my record. If this measure is greater than C times, nature is telling me a couple of things. The price is always between big M and little M. There is somebody who can, some strategist out there who can always get within a. Achieve a return of at worst, the optimum offline return divided by C, right? There's some strategist out there that can do it. Now your job is to move the money from here to here. If the money was greater than C, if the price was greater than C, and you didn't sell anything, At that instance, it would drop. It could drop down to nothing. Your return would be at most n, because you can set little n here, the lower bound. When you're trying to defend your performance against somebody, they'll say, "Wait, this other guy could have gotten would have gotten a better performance than you, right? He guaranteed a factor C ratio. Your ratio is worse than C. Therefore, I should fire you and replace you with the other trader." Okay? Everybody sort of agreed that that's basically true. Yeah? Okay, well, the issue here, we'll say that this is a one-way trading problem. I'll talk about two-way trading later on, where I have two assets and I want to move back and forth between them. But I would claim that this is the problem of how do I liquidate my position, okay, in a stock. And this, I would claim, is a very important problem. What is an example of this? You're a mutual fund. You have decided that you want to get out of Martha Stewart, Inc., right? You own a lot of Martha Stewart, Inc. at this point. If you want to clear your position, there is going to be a trading strategy. You know, you have to somehow sell. Okay? One thing we know is that in general, if you start to sell a large block of stock, that will cause the price to drop, right? Because there's an imbalance between supply and demand. So one thing that brokerage houses most definitely has to solve is this problem of given a holding in one stock, liquidate it for the maximum return. And so that's the problem I'm trying to solve. Is that convincing? I'll say it doesn't matter what the lot was bought at. Okay? You have decided to get out. Okay? Once you've decided to get out, the question is, what time should you get out? How should you get out? You could hit return and say, out now. Or you could say, you know, I need the money sometime in the next week. Maybe I should sell it in a way that will optimize my return, knowing that I have to sell it over the next week. And that is the problem that I'm addressing. Okay, and I think that's a reasonable problem. Okay? You agree? Okay, good. Any questions? Okay. So what I want to claim is that there is another class of strategies here that should now be believable. We're going to use this idea later on. But I think the idea should sort of be clear that if there is such a strategy, okay, if I know that C, okay, there is an amount for me to sell such that I can stay on track. And if I do enough analysis as a function of C and how much stock there is and M and N, I claim I can do that in a way to achieve this. Any questions? Okay, that should sort of be clear. It should be clear now that such a strategy exists. To formally give you the strategy, I have to tell you how much money you need to sell. Okay? Is it worth trying to figure that out? Maybe at least think a little bit about it. Okay? Suppose, let's say, you know, the price here is C. It's two, you know, we've got two C originally. I don't know if we want to try to figure this out online or not. Okay? You know, what are the two things that can happen? Well, I want to sell enough so that I don't, that even if it goes higher up to here, my two conditions are, okay, I want to make sure I sell enough that if it drops all the way down to here and stays, I don't regret it, right? But I want to hold on to enough so that even if it goes, if it goes higher than that, okay, I won't regret it either. Okay? Any questions about that? Okay? I'm saying the calculations are a little bit tricky, but the basic idea, I think, should be clear now. Okay? Any questions? And again, so the bounds that we talked about last time, we achieved a order log ratio of big M over little n bound using a randomized strategy. Okay? This proves that we can do at least as well with a threat-based strategy, because there is a strategy that does that. Okay? And in fact, if you do the analysis careful enough, you can prove that you can do a little bit better than that. Okay? But the idea of a threat-based strategy should be clear and interesting. Any questions? Okay. So let's just review a little bit what the state of the model is. Okay? So, again, are our algorithms, competitive algorithms, useful for price searching and one-way trading? Okay? We make certain assumptions. One assumption we make is that there's an upper bound on the price movement and a lower bound on the price movement, right? On the maximum price and upper bound on the price and a lower bound on the price. That is probably a little bit suspicious, but in general, you can probably, you can certainly in principle make upper and lower, higher, estimates based on historical studies. You can figure out what is an upper bound and what is a lower bound that is almost certain to hold over a short period of time. So I don't think that's necessarily something that breaks our model as being uninteresting. Okay? The trouble, of course, is that our results are in terms of the ratio of upper and lower bounds. So the wider you make the bounds to make it more likely the price stays in there, the worse the theoretical results are. Okay? Because they're a function of this competitive ratio. Okay? Any questions? The other thing is that our guarantees, saying that we're going to do at most, let's say, at worst, C times that of the optimal trader, if God had been doing the trading, is good. But in fact, what you're usually looking for is how do you do compared to real traders, okay? And most traders, first of all, don't do as well as God because they don't know the future. But on the other hand, so in general, the difference between good investors and not so good investors is often only a small, relatively small percentage points, a relatively small spread, okay? So the bounds that we're talking about here are probably larger than you see in practice between good and reasonable bettors. So those guarantees are not necessarily so meaningful. You know, if I guarantee you a return of 0.001% and everybody is getting a return of 10%, my guarantee is not very interesting, okay? And so that may be an issue in viewing these things, okay? But what I think makes this stuff important and interesting is it does give us ideas for thinking about how you would implement the strategy to liquidate positions, okay? And that, as I say, is a perfectly reasonable problem. Any questions? Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, there's different strategies. Chain, remember, I mean, that's what our bounds were, okay? There's three different strategies. There's two different classes of liquidation strategies we've looked at. One was this one where we set levels and have sell prices at all of these levels, okay? And that's what you think about it. Not a bad way to liquidate your position, right? You stop and think about it. You'll sell some of it at the market rate now. And some of it, you'll say, gee, if it gets high enough, I'm going to go buy it. I'll sell it there. And if not, I'll sell it at the end. Right? Does that seem like a reasonable strategy? That is probably not unreasonable. If I were going to liquidate stocks, that might be a perfect, that's a class of strategy that I would consider. Okay? And that's basically what the randomized algorithm was telling us to do. The other possibility is this defensive strategy. If I want to guarantee a particular return, if I know such a return is obtainable, I want to argue I can throttle my money around to obtain that if, in fact, it probably is a way to obtain that much money. That's really what the threat says. Any questions? Okay. Let's look at some other problems on which are related to sort of online analysis of, let's say, these sort of online algorithms where you have to make predictions about, what do you do with your money at each instance of time. One of these problems that's very important is portfolio selection. Okay? We're going to assume in general that you have access to, a certain number of different types of securities that you can bet on. Okay? In the limited case, maybe there's only two types of securities. There's the stocks, or you can put things in cash. And in general, you know, cash is going to show no return, but it's never going to lose it. You can stuff your money in a mattress. Stocks are going to, prices are going to go up and down, up and down. And the question would be, suppose you have a certain amount of money you want to invest. Suppose that it's not a liquidation problem, but you can move your money. You initially have your money in, let's say, cash. You're allowed to move it into stock or move it from stock into cash. And you're allowed to change your holdings at any function of time. How can you decide how to partition your money between stocks and cash? Does that seem like a reasonable problem to want to solve? Okay? You have an initial amount of money, you know, let's say it's, you know, it doesn't really matter what it is, it's X. At the end, you want to maximize your return on that money, right? X plus, you know, times your return. At each time period, we can kind of view every day, let's say, as a time period. You have two possibilities. You can either have your money in stock at that day, or you can have your money in cash at that day, or you can have both. Okay? How should you decide on those kind of allocations? Okay? Any ideas how you might make decisions like that? So one idea might be to say, if you think you know about which direction the market is going to go, you're saying you have read the newspaper, you see clouds on the horizon, the market is going to go down, I will put my money in cash. Okay? That assumes that you know how to read what the market is saying, correct? Now, is that true? Is that based on, let's say, our assumptions about efficient markets? Is there any reason to believe you know what which way the market is going to go?
Probability for a couple of months overall. The market could go anywhere, really, so you really don't know.
So in principle, if we realize the, you know, if we think about what the market is going to do, okay, if you know what direction it's going to go, or you can make a prediction about which direction it's going to go, that might tell you, that's going to tell you where you should put your money. But if you believe in an efficient market, your predictions are presumably worth nothing. Okay? So that's not the kind of strategy that we're really going to be interested in here. Okay? The question is, how should you allocate your money to protect yourself against the market? Yeah? Okay, so one possibility that you're saying now is, suppose we monitor what the prices are doing, okay? So, if we know stocks can go between upper and lower bounds, if the stock is here, okay, your argument is that maybe you would want to sell, because you know you have little upside. I think, is that what you're basically saying? I think your theory is now based on limited upside. If you know the prices move between here and here, your argument might be on the basis of how much upside is there. Okay? Does that give you any advice as to what to do when you're in the middle, though? That might say half in, half out. Okay? Okay? Of course, it's still the case that you could probably do. And then now here, if it's at the bottom, you would put all your money into stock, right? Is that what you're sort of saying?
Yeah,
100%. Okay. So one possibility is, and I'm not sure whether I'm agreeing with this one or not, okay? Does everybody agree that that is a strategy for this? Okay? That based on the current price of the stock, okay, you would buy or sell based on where it is. Okay, your ratio would depend upon where it actually, what it actually is. Now, what would be a bad outcome? What would be a bad sequence of prices for your strategy, though? What? Well, breaking the upper or lower bound would be bad. That we agree. But what would be a very bad idea? would be probably, okay, so I guess what you're saying is if we had something that was doing like this, okay, well, wait, let's just think about that.
Yeah, this favors the theory that markets risk more than there is any trend.
Well, let us think under what condition your strategy was the wrong thing to do. That's really what I'm trying to figure out now. And maybe I'm wrong. If the price was low and it went up, that would be bad for you, right? That would be actually good for you because you owned more of it, right? So you are somehow protected against swings like that. Okay? What would be bad for you would presumably be, one that would be bad for you is if it started here and you put half your money in and it went down to nothing. Okay? And then it went back up to half and you put half your money in there. Right? Well, okay, so the question of what is, okay, so let's think a little bit about that. So one possibility is that you're picturing that you can buy and sell on the way around here, that you're going to change your holdings dynamically in response to the price. That's really what you're sort of saying. You're going to change your asset allocation continuously in response to the price. Okay? And that does not seem offhand like a necessarily bad idea. Except, of course, that there might be discontinuities in price. You know, we saw what happened with Martha Stewart the other day, right? But so what would be a bad outcome for you? Just trying to figure out. It seems like a reasonable strategy, okay? But let's think what would be a bad outcome. We're trying to think from a worst-case outcome. The worst-case outcome would be it was at 50-50 and it immediately dropped. Now you lost everything except that was in cash, right? You lost a lot of money except that it was in cash. And now everything is in the stock, is that right? Your half of the money that's left is in the stock, right? And now it goes back up. I guess you have your initial value back, is that right? Any sudden decline, but now what's interesting is with his strategy, is that if it ever gets back to that level, if at this point he started out at a half and a half, if it went down and went back up, okay, what happened to him? Okay, basically his portfolio was unchanged, his half his money was sitting in cash here, right? It dropped down to this, okay. Well, actually, the question is this a doubling or is this what? You know, what are we talking about? Is this supposed to be at the point M? This is at the point M over N. Wait, this is what? M minus M over 2? Is this the middle line between upper and lower bounds? So at this point, if it started out here, if it went down to here, you lost far more than half your money almost got wiped out, right? But if you put your other half into the stock now, what actually happened? Okay, it actually got multiplied by a lot, right? If you bought this by N, if N, big N, is more than 2M, 2 little M, then you made more than doubling it, right? Then, in fact, on this particular strategy, that was not necessarily a bad thing to do, right? Okay, without dealing with markets and market stops, we're also not dealing with transaction costs. He had this world where he was selling stocks continuously. If you were paying transaction costs, that would be a bad thing. But here we're all friends, we don't pay transaction costs. Okay? But what he's suggesting is a strategy that is a lot like, if you want to view, let's say, what kind of strategies are there that people use to switch between assets? One strategy is the buy and hold strategy, right? What is it that Skeena does? Skeena buys some stock now, today, and I sit on it forever, and then, you know, right before I die, I sell it, right? Or when I actually need the money, I sell it, okay? Everyone's familiar with that kind of a strategy. What is good about that kind of a strategy? If we assume that stocks prices increase exponentially, which is what somehow should happen according to our previous models, okay? This strategy will give me a return, and I will pay very little nothing in transaction costs, right? Everybody agree with that? So buy and hold is a popular and reasonable strategy, okay? Under our model, buy and hold might be a very, very bad thing to do. Why would that be the case? Well, suppose, let's say that the price was, I bought it here. Let's say that it did go down and up, 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 down and up over the years. Okay? If this is true, buy and hold here would be bad in a competitive sense. Right? Because what I would have been better off doing is keeping my money in cash in these periods, in the down periods, and keeping it in the stock in the other periods. Does everybody agree that if I did that, I would be getting essentially exponential growth, right? I would be having a large increase in every one of these cycles. Is that sort of clear? Okay? Because I wouldn't have lost, if I knew exactly what the timing was, this represents a sharp increase. Next time through, I'm going to be doing, you know, taking that money and compounding it with this sharp increase. Okay? I would be basically, if I had n such bumps, it would be my percentage increase to the end. Okay, it would be my returns. Everybody sort of agree? So a market timing strategy, where you had tomorrow's newspaper, would do much better. Does everybody agree with that? So it depends upon, again, the thing that we have to keep in mind is there's different models of what prices will do, depending upon whose model you're talking about. When we were talking about the capital assets pricing model, then the price was a function of volatility and interest rates, right? Here we're in the adversary model. You're dealing with somebody who's trying to hurt you, okay? And the question is, what is the worst sequence of prices that can happen to make your investment strategy bad? And the claim would be if you're defended against all sequences of price movements, that is in principle a good thing. Okay? Does everybody agree with that? So if you believe in the computer science worst case analysis, the idea of doing competitive analysis is the right way to think about it. If you believe in the capital assets pricing model, you're worrying if you're thinking about things based on risk and interest rates and stuff like that. These are sort of, we're right now going to be thinking about it with a different price model, okay? And, you know, the right way to think about these things, I think, is to have lots of different models in hand and know when you want to apply one or the other, okay? Yeah. Say, looking at something that is kind of a different way of looking at it, in a world where I am not knowledgeable about those things, I don't necessarily believe those are the things that are governing the market, I am buying a strategy that is going to, regardless of what happens to prices, I am protected. I would argue that the arbitragers, isn't that what arbitragers are trying to sort of do? They're trying to come up with a way of making money regardless of what the sequence of prices are, right? In some sense, we're sort of trying to figure out, too, what is the strategy I will do that will do best in the worst sequence of prices? That is really what the competitive analysis is about. Okay? And so the way of thinking about it is I'm trying to look at when I'm trying to figure out a portfolio allocation, what can happen? Okay? I mean, what does your risk-free rate, your interest rate thing tell you about how you should allocate your money between stocks and interest rates? And stocks and cash? Okay, I'm a professor, I'm a member of TIA CREF, which is sort of the retirement plan here. Okay? And in fact, the first day that I came in here, okay, I was told, Skeena, you're going to be earning retirement money for the rest of your life. You're going to stay at Stony Brook. You could put it in our fixed interest thing, which I think is called CREF, that I think is the you know, cash fixed rate. Or you can put your money in, in the stock thing, which is, I think, TIAA. Or maybe I've got it backwards. It doesn't make any difference. How should I have allocated my money between those two? That's really what the question we're asking. And as time goes by, how should I change that? Okay? And I now want us to look at, you know, what is a strategy for doing that? Your argument, sort of, right now would be, maybe if it was in the middle of historic ranges, I should put the money half and half, and otherwise shift it to the one that is down. That sort of seems to be what you're sort of saying, right? Okay? That's not buy and hold, we agree. Okay? That is a market timing strategy, but not one where you're sort of assuming you know what the future really is. That's an aspect that I'm going to say is related to what you would call a constant rebalancing strategy. Okay? One idea would hold that I am going to always insist that half my wealth be in one and half my wealth be in the other. Okay? Suppose I always insist that I've got a fixed percentage of my wealth in both of them. What am I going to do when the price goes up by your strategy? The price of the stock goes up. What am I going to do? Start selling. What am I going to do in a constant rebalancing thing if my stock goes up relative to cash? In order to maintain my wealth equally partitioned among the two of them, I'm going to start selling. Does everybody sort of agree with that? So, I mean, one thing that happened to many investors, including myself, okay, when I look at, in principle, I told TIA Cref the day that I came here, I'll have you know, that I put half of it in stocks and half of it in the fixed thing. Why? Because I couldn't come up with any other percentage, right? Now, as time went by, that's where every amount of money that I invested, it got put half into one and half into the other. Where do you think my wealth was as a function of time? I came here in 1988. If I put all my monthly investments in equally, where was my portfolio? Was my portfolio equally held between the two of them? So what's interesting is that during the boom time, the money I had put in the stocks had done much better, right? So that part of my account was much better. Then the stocks collapsed, okay? And what was interesting was actually that up until very recently, in fact, they were almost equal, the two halves, okay? But it should be clear that if I want a constant rebalancing strategy, like you're suggesting, what I really need to do is constantly move money back and forth. Just initially allocating the assets in a particular way won't do it. Everybody sort of agree with that? Okay. And so in general, you know, if I had done a constant rebalancing, what would have happened was during the boom, I would have sucked money into the other account, and I probably would have been happier. Okay. But, you know, I would have had to do constant monitoring and stuff like that. Any questions? Okay. So those are issues on portfolio selection. Any questions about this? You should at least have some kind of an idea now about what the problems are. Any questions? Okay. Let's look more detailed at the special case of portfolio selection where you only have stocks and cash. In general, you can say, you know, you have access to a lot of different securities. Okay? The two-way trading problem is one where we have stocks and cash, and we want to move money between them so as to optimize our return. Okay? The difference from one-way trading is that we are, again, moving our money from stocks to, we can move money from stocks to cash and also from cash to stocks. Okay? Any questions? So what would be the optimal offline strategy? If I had a tomorrow's newspaper every day, what would be the right offline strategy for portfolio management? Okay? If I knew the future, what would be the right way to manage my portfolio?
Yeah, look at what stocks would be doing best and best values.
So by the choice of stocks or cash, if stocks do better than cash tomorrow, I should be in stocks. If cash does better than stocks, I will be I should be in cash. Does everybody agree with that? So the optimal offline strategy is an easy strategy. Okay, here I happen to have shown Martha Stewart's stock price, just so everybody is discussing a little bit. Here's the stock table for Martha, the curve for Martha Stewart this year. And as you'll notice, what happened was, this is somewhat smooth a little bit, but basically, it started out, you know, Martha Stewart had a pretty good time. Then it went down a little bit. Then it went up a little bit. Then it crashed. And in fact, since then, it's actually been going up. Okay, interestingly enough, this may be an overreaction. Okay? But if you really knew the future, you would allocate it, you would take the best each day. The other approach, as you said, might be a constant rebalancing thing, okay? But there's no guarantee that a constant rebalancing thing is going to make a profit if one exists, okay? We're going to now look at a class of strategies that we say are money-making, okay? We'll say that a trading strategy is provably money-making if it returns a positive profit for every single sequence on which the offline strategy returns a profit. Okay? Suppose, let's say that, we lived in a world where prices were always dropping. Okay? Was there any way to do better than holding cash over the time? Okay? These are stocks. Cash, we assume, is fixed, right? If the price was always going down, decreasing over this interval, is there any way we could have made a positive profit? Okay, there was no good time to convert our money into stock unless we wanted to lose it, right? So I would claim that for certain that under certain market conditions, there is no way to make a profit, right? End up with more money than you started with, right? But if there is, at any instant in time, a slight uptick, I claim that there is a way to make profit offline. Do you agree with that? That by just keeping my money out of the stock market until then, keeping it in for that instant and getting rid of it, I would make a profit. Okay? Can we come up with a strategy that if we are told by our adversary, look, over the next, we're not going to tell you upper and lower bounds in the price movements, but I will tell you the following. There will be a positive increase. There will be some way that if you had been optimally smart, if you knew the future, there would be a way to make a positive return over this interval. Is there any strategy you can use to allocate it so as to guarantee you that return? Let's think about that. Okay? Okay? Any ideas what you might do? Well, I don't know what the optimal thing is. I am guaranteed that there is a profit to be made somewhere in this interval, right? Is there any way I can find that profit? Okay, or some profit. Some way that the guarantee I want is that if there was a profit, that if there is, okay, what you call it? Okay. The question that I'm looking for is there a strategy that can provably money making? Okay. And any ideas how you might do that? Let's take a look at it. Yeah. About probabilities. What I think what you're saying is something like this. If I am told that there is going to be a profit and it has only gone downhill the whole time, I know that somewhere in this interval there is going to be a profit, right? So certainly if it had been downhill all the way up until the last day, then I knew the last day I might as well be in stocks, right? So the guarantee that I'm going to make a profit here, okay, if it was all decreasing all the way along, okay, I could in principle make a profit the last day, right? But in general, if all I am told is that there is a profit to be made, and not told how big that profit is, I claim that there is no strategy that will guarantee me making money. Okay? And why is that? Because suppose, let's say, at the beginning, I was not invested, okay, in the stock market, right? Then, okay, that would be the only time that I get a positive return. And then I immediately, returns always drop down to nothing from then on, right? So if I was ever at a moment where my strategy was not in the market, that could be the only time where there was a positive return, right? Otherwise, suppose I was in the market initially. I can drive the price low enough, okay, that I get wiped out here. And even though there's another little bounce later on, okay, my losses won't be enough to overcome it. Does everybody agree with that? So you should agree that if I don't tell you how much of a return, I told you there is a profit to be made, but I don't tell you how much it is, okay, there's no guaranteed money-making strategy. What's interesting is, if you tell me how big the profit is going to be that I might be able to make offline, then in fact I can prove there is a money-making strategy, okay? So what am I now trying to show you? I'd like to show you that if I have an adversary, okay, who is going to tell me that over the next n minus plus 1 days of returns, the optimal strategy would get a return of at least 5, I can now come up with a way to trade, okay, so as to guarantee myself a profit, okay? Let's think about this. Doesn't sound like it's possible at first, but let's think a little bit about that. Okay? First of all, we agree that what's going to happen if I'm getting a return of 5, and there's a sequence of daily returns that are being offered by my adversaries. We agree that the optimal strategy was at every point either going to be getting myself, keeping my money in cash where it was unchanged, or taking the positive return that was when it's offered, right? So saying the adversary is giving me a return of 5 is the same as saying that 5 is equal to the product of the maximum of 1 in the daily returns, okay, for each day during the sequence, right? It's not actually very interesting. Okay? Suppose we have an adversary that is guaranteed to give me, is promising me that I will that sometime over the next N days, there was a way to make a return of 5. Can I do my trading in such a way as to make money? How might I take advantage of that information? Someone is guaranteeing me there is a positive return of at least a certain amount. Okay, there's a positive return of 5 if I know the ups and downs. And I can put my money in cash or stock. Okay? Any ideas how I can allocate that? What if I told you there was only going to be one trading period? Meaning that I guarantee that there is a way of making money, a return of 5. And you only have one day to buy the stock and one day to sell it. How should I allocate my money? What? Put everything into the stock. Why is that? Because I'm guaranteed a positive return. I've been told that the sequence you're going to give me is going to return 5. There is a way of getting 5. Basically, the only thing that's going to offer a positive return is being in stock. If you're telling me that there's going to be if you're guaranteeing me a return of 5 between now and tomorrow, then I have to buy the stock, right? And I will get that return. Does everybody agree with that? Of course, we go to Martha Stewart with guarantees like that that got her in prison in the first place, right? But does everybody agree that if the period was 2 days and I guaranteed you a return of 5, that you could guarantee yourself a profit? It may not seem very interesting now, but does everybody agree that for 2 days you can do it? You know how to do it now, right? What if I tell you it's going to be over 3 days? Okay, so there's 2 return periods. And that over those 2 return periods is a way of making 5. Is there a way of that I can guarantee myself some kind of profit? Let's think about this. Yeah? So what about if you say, leave everything in cash now and see what happens? Well, you know what your adversary is going to do if you do that. What's your adversary going to do? That day was the day it jacked up, right? So that's not going to do it, right? You're not guaranteed anything that way. Is there any way you can guarantee yourself a positive return under this environment?
Yeah, split your money into 2 accounts.
So what you're saying? Okay, so I've got 3 days or 2 trading periods. You're saying I should put my money into 2 halves, pieces. What are the pieces you want to suggest?
Just
2 trading days. 2 trading days. Let's keep it. 1 trading day we agree with. What?
1 trading day. Whatever.
Yes. Right. So what about the 2 trading days?
Put it in half.
Suppose I put half my money in the first day and half the money in the second day. Half the money in stocks and half the money in cash. Okay, is this strategy going to guarantee me a profit? If there's a profit of 5 to be made? I claim the answer is no. Why is that? What might happen the first day? Stocks crash, I have lost half my money now, right? Now, on my other half, you say, okay, I'll put it in the stock market, and I get my little return of 5. Everybody agree with that? So I put half the money in there. That is clearly too much. But what if I put, let's say, initially an infinitesimally small amount of money in the stock market, right? What are the two things? I put in a thing, I have epsilon and 1 minus epsilon. And 1 minus epsilon is sitting in cash. Does everybody agree with that? What are the two things that can happen? If the stock went up, what would I do? What could I do to guarantee myself a profit over the period? What? No. Sell, right? If I now sell, I have this tiny little bit of smart money that was in the market. If that went up, okay, I sell it, I've made a profit. Does everybody agree with that? I walk away. Now I can say I have a profit, right? If not, what do I know? It went down the first day. And what do I now know about the second day? It has to go up by 5. Okay? And so if I have enough cash left to overcome the loss of that thing, my slave, I can guarantee myself a profit. Everybody sort of agree with that? It should be clear that this is now doable. Okay? Now, of course, epsilon is a sort of a very small victory, right? I throw a penny into the stock market and I keep the other billion out. I guarantee myself a profit. Okay? But the question really is, how much should I put in there? Okay? And then it should be clear that there is a maximum amount I can put in there so as to guarantee myself a profit regardless of what happens, right? I mean, so long as there is a return of buy to be had. Okay? What about for 3 days? Let's say there were 3 trading periods. Is there a way to make money if there are 3 trading periods? You say geometric mean. I'm not gonna. I can't in my head think whether you're right or wrong about geometric mean. But it is clear to me that again, if you put a small enough amount of money in the first day, okay, the worst that can happen is you lose it all, right? You then have, but you have enough money to put it in the second day, and the worst that can happen is you lose it all, right? And then the third day, okay, you're guaranteed that it will go up. Does everybody agree with that? So I think what we have now proven is that there is a money-making strategy. If all we want to do is to guarantee we come out with a profit over this period, if there is a profit to be had and we know abound on that, we can achieve some kind of profit. Okay? Everybody should be convinced of that now. Okay? Okay, I think that's basically what I have just said here, okay? That again, if we have 2 days, we know, that it's obvious how we make a profit. For 3 days, by betting a small enough amount of money, we can do this kind of thing. And by working backwards N days, we should be able to guarantee it, we can guarantee it from the very beginning. Okay, any questions? Now that might seem pretty silly, okay, if we're just dealing with epsilons. But what is the actual amount that we can do it? I claim that there is, in general, an optimal strategy for this. And I'd like to show you what the equation is for the optimal strategy and have us try to work that thing out. Okay, we see what it makes sense. Suppose, in general, there are N days in the game. My maximum amount of money that I can get is 5. Okay? Now, if it's 2 days, I can earn a return of 5. Basically, using the strategy of just sort of putting the money in the non-cash assets. That we agree. Otherwise, what I'm going to do is take my current wealth, put a fraction B of it into the non-cash assets, where B is the amount, is the position that maximizes the following quantity, okay? It's trying to minimize this equation. What is that? Well, B times X, okay, where X is the argument in this minimization, okay, plus 1 minus B times the return, okay, that you would get from on N minus 1 periods, okay, for a slightly different value of 5. Okay, now let's think where that comes up. Okay? It should be clear that in any strategy, I am going to be putting some fraction of my money in cash, some money in stocks. That fraction is governed by B. So we know what B is. Okay? We are going to design the B to give us the best possible value when against an adversary who can pick the next day's return to screw us as much as possible, right? The adversary is trying to hurt us. The adversary can hurt us in any way that they want, provided they live up to the guarantee that I get a global return. Somebody, you know, has an offline return of phi over the entire period. Is that clear? So, the adversary is going to pick the x to minimize what? Okay? It's b times x. My return is going to be, if I had b percent of my money in stocks and the return was x, then b times x is my return from stocks. 1 minus b is my return from cash. Why is that? Because all my money was either in stocks or in cash. Does everybody agree with that? And this is sort of preserved. This fluctuates. Okay? What is my return from, and what's going to happen to this money now? The adversary picks this X. He's not trying to screw me for tomorrow. He's trying to screw me for tomorrow as much as he can to screw me globally. Right? So what is the best possible return I can get from here on out? After today, there are N minus 1 trading days, right? And I claim that there is, once I know what today's trading value was, I know that I was globally given a, I was globally given a guarantee that there was a value phi to be gotten. If there was a value of X returned yesterday, today, that was positive, the amount of phi that is left for the strategy to give me over the rest of the period is going to be smaller, right? The adversary might decide to give it to me now, the positive return. Okay? In which case, it is the question of what return is there going to be for me? Okay? So my So it's basically, how much money do I have after today? Raised to what return, okay, that I will get, okay, if I continue this game, okay, over the next N minus 1 periods, given the adversary has only a certain amount of wealth of, let's say, positive return left that he has to give me. Any questions? So this looks like a weird equation. But if you think about it, is this a computable equation? Okay, I'm going to claim that you can compute this thing. Why? Well, it's really the kind of thing that you do with dynamic programming. Does everybody know what dynamic programming is? We does not know what dynamic programming is. Okay, a few people, okay. Dynamic programming is an algorithmic strategy which evaluates, which is a way to basically evaluate recursive equations. Let's say you have a recurrence relationship where you want to know what f of n is as a function of f of n minus 1. If you can compute what f of n minus 1 is, once you know the answer for f of n minus 1, you can compute the answer for f of n. Right? And somehow what this is telling you is, if you want to figure out what the return is from n minus, after n stages, this gives you a way of describing what you can hope to get after n stages in terms of what you can hope to get after n minus 1 stages. Everybody sort of see that? So in some sense, we're looking at here the answer to what the optimal thing to do is going to depend upon the optimal thing to do with smaller problems. And if we make the problem small enough, you already know how to solve it. Does everybody agree with that? So in principle, if you know how to solve it for 2, which we do, using this equation we can solve it for 3, since that's only going to give us, depend on values for 2. Once we've got all solutions for 2, for 3 we can now solve all instances of 4 days, and 5 days, and 6 days. And so I claim this kind of an equation can be worked out. Any questions about that? Okay? So the idea of dynamic programming is an important algorithmic idea. Okay, and we're using it in a way that's a little bit different than the dynamic programming algorithms that you normally see. Because this is sort of a continuous thing. Okay, it depends upon the parameterized here by phi, which is a continuous value. Okay, But nonetheless, in principle, you can compute it by similar ideas. Any questions? And again, what is the effect of phi? Well, basically, if the last period had a positive return, okay, the phi that we get from this period is going to be less, for the smaller period is going to be less by that return, otherwise with a negative return it would stay the same. Any questions? Okay? So bottom line is we have a provable money-making strategy. Okay? Now just because it makes a lot of, question? Why isn't it phi minus x? Phi is a guaranteed return over the period, right? X is what was returned on the nth day. So this should be phi is a function of what phi was, phi of n, and x, right? And that's exactly what I'm saying here. The new phi is a function of the old phi divided by the return. Okay, you should subtract, but really you meant divide. Okay? Because it's a multiplicative thing. Okay? Any questions here? Okay? So the interesting thing is that this kind of thing can be optimized, can be determined by dynamic programming. Okay? And it does not offhand seem like a terrible strategy to use. Okay? The strategy now has some sophistication to it. Okay? It always guarantees you a profit if it's there. It might, however, yield a poor profit when there was a good profit to be made. Okay? That's sort of the downside to this kind of a strategy. Which, if you think about it, sort of makes sense. If you have a risk-free strategy, okay, in some sense, okay, you know, the possibility that a riskier strategy might return a larger return makes sense. Okay? Any questions here? Okay? So it's kind of an interesting, I look like it's an interesting portfolio optimization idea. Any questions? Okay. I think, actually I've got some more slides. I think I'm going to hold off on that because it's a slightly different model. Okay? But basically, next Tuesday, we do not have class because I'm out of town. After that, we're going to continue to look at these, basic competitive ratio ideas for finance. Any questions? Okay, thanks for your attention. See you next week. Bye.